You are listening to the Doug Hagman Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagman.
Good morning, everyone. It's 6 a.m. on the West Coast of America, 9 a.m. here in the East. Welcome to Hagman. It is the Doug Hagman Investigative Hour for today. It's Wednesday, November 29th, 2017. Thanks for joining me this morning. I'm going to be taking an in-depth look at tomorrow's headlines today, delving deep into really three issues that face all of us wherever we might be in the free world. And I'm going to take them systematically, and I'm going to provide to you between the start of the program and the end of the program, giving you the details, but wrapping this up in a bow. The ultimate objective of the deep state, number one, is the taking down of Donald Trump. And I have to tell you, and people are not seeing this, the movement to take down Donald Trump is unbelievably, it's an overdrive right now. Now, the permanent state, the shadow government, what many refer to just simply as the deep state, although, as I say often, and I quote Kevin Shipp on this, the former CIA officer, the deep state is a subset of the shadow government. But semantics aside, let's just, if you want to, for the purposes of this discussion, interchange deep state, shadow government, permanent state, fine. That's not important. What is important is the overall objective here. It has been the objective since day one to remove Donald Trump from office. Because, as I've said many times, it was Hillary Clinton that was supposed to continue to carry on the agenda to communize the United States. I don't know how much clearer I can make that. And it's not a new agenda. The objective is not new. It's been for really all throughout the 20th century, especially after in the post-World War II arena. Now, and it's interesting, by the way, to see the parallels. If you look at history, to see the parallels between the time immediately following World War II to today, and I say this often, but I think it's lost on many people. I am personally a student of history. I never liked history growing up in school. I thought it was boring. What do I need to memorize dates for? Who cares? But there's more. There's more to that, of course. And it's the when you really get into the history, the true history of the United States, the true history of World War II, the true history of all things past, you can see where we are today. And you can also identify the players. You can identify the people behind this massive agenda of taking down the United States as a representative republic, as a free nation. And the greatest enemies are within the walls already, within the United States already. That's obviously the number one topic I'll be leading off with. Number two, the role and goal of the deep state shadow government, the permanent state, to communize the United States. And you might say, wait a minute, you just said that. No. Well, more or less. That's the, but the mechanics with respect to the takedown of Donald Trump, I'm going to be getting into. That would be number one, the mechanics. Because there are things going on behind the scenes you're not aware of that involve these deals, in particular, people such as Michael Flynn and Michael Flynn Jr. There's things going on in the background that are causing much distress and consternation among people inside, well, the people who know what's going on. And this is not making news anywhere, but that's a separate entity by itself. Okay, so I'll be addressing first the takedown, second the communization, which again, the first part is a subset, but we need to address these separately. And thirdly, the the process of silencing the truth tellers, the censorship, the redaction, the withholding. This is a big part of the advancement of this communist agenda, of achieving this collective mindset in the United States. And the ultimate goal here for those biblically minded, shall we say, is the reestablishment of the Tower of Babel. I'm speaking metaphorically, but I suppose, but not really. Look, the goal is to create this global governance via the United Nations. And I know, especially for the older people listening to this, you might say, wow, you sound like somebody from the John Birch Society back in the day. Or no, hold on a minute. This is a real goal here. And it's all about the collective. But what we're watching right now, and, you know, I've got to tell you, I woke up this morning, I traveled to the office, I got to the office, put on a pot of coffee, drank that coffee. It's 5:30 this morning, and just going through every single piece of documentation. I went through a number of books and citations from the books, and I was thinking, you know, something is weighing heavily on my heart here, and it's the larger agenda that people are not seeing, but there are smaller pieces to the puzzle. For example, I have segmented. Let me look here. I think, let's see here. I've got 1, 2, 3. I've segmented 4 audio clips today to play today. And all 4 really, I believe, if you listen carefully to all 4 audio clips, you will get the historical component and the current component to exactly what I'm saying. As I said, you've got the process, the mechanical process of taking down Donald Trump. And it's not about the man as much as the movement behind the man. But the unintended, or I believe the consequences, the unstated consequences from that action are going to be severe and will rip this country apart even more than it's going to be horrific. But the deep state, the permanent state, the shadow government is prepared for that. In fact, they're looking forward, in my view, to that, especially when you study history. Now, what the shadow government, deep state, permanent state, what they are not looking forward to, or what they are not happy about, is the exposure to their tactics, exposure to what their in-game objective is. Although it's out there, they still want to operate more or less in the shadows. In a subset of that, for example, where's that represented? Well, look at today. You've got Judicial Watch coming out and saying, you know what, remember that tarmac meeting, the FBI? We submitted a FOIA request to the FBI, and of course the FBI said they had no documents related to the Clinton-Lynch tarmac meeting. Well, come to find out, Judicial Watch today, or this week, said, whoa, 30 documents. 30 documents. The Judicial Watch sued the FBI, or took them to court, Department of Justice, and found, of course, 30 documents, or were given 30 documents related to that meeting. There's an active role. There's an active process of redaction, withholding, destruction of evidence, and they don't. The permanent state, the deep state, does not want. They don't want this. The American people to know this. But it's taking place right now. So you're looking at subsets of these 3 main topics. And there's historical, there's a great historical aspect to all of this as well. We've seen this happen before and numerous times. And if you go back one more time, if you go back into the McCarthy era, if you look at the studies or at the research conducted by M. Stanton Evans, I'm going to get into that as well. In the 1990s, when M. Stanton Evans was preparing to write his book about the workings of Senator McCarthy and his objective to root out communism inside our government, even in the 1990s, documents were being removed from the National Archives, newspapers, other locations. 40 years, 50, almost 50 years after the events that took place. And that is happening again today. And that is something that the permanent state does not want you to understand what's going on. Because this, and let me say this. You think that because Donald Trump is in office that this shouldn't happen, but it's happening with even greater ferocity with the holdovers, holdouts, the permanent, the bureaucrats inside our government. It is taking place at it's even more fiercely right now. That's why they've got to get Donald Trump out of office. And by doing so, to neuter the will of the American people, of the people who really believe in American exceptionalism, the patriotic people. And the third issue, as I was saying, going after the truth seekers, the truth tellers, the censorship, and a subset of that as well. One of the most abhorrent, in my view, aspects of that are the self-identified conservatives, or those people calling themselves conservatives, or Christians, or journalists, or, well, people on the good side, people who are saying, look, we're in this fight to expose the shadow government, but they're not. And their single objective is to destroy those attempting to expose the evil, dark doings of the permanent state. Now, one would expect, for example, and I speak often, as you know, if you've listened to this program for any length of time, I speak often about Sean Hannity. I speak about Laura Ingraham and other hosts in the conservative corporate media. And there are precious few, but they exist. Which is why I am so protective and so desirous to protect Sean Hannity to the best of, and support him to the best of my ability. I do know that Sean Hannity is a stellar individual. I do know that it is the objective of Sean Hannity to expose various issues. And he has not forgotten. Trust me when I tell you this. He has not forgotten Seth Rich. He is fully aware of Pizzagate and Pedogate. He understands the evils of the Clintons and the Obamas, and he understands the and I don't pretend to speak for him. That's not what I'm doing, but I can tell you with every fiber of my being, he also understands the significance about the illegitimacy of the Obama regime and Obama himself. Whether you call it birtherism or whatever, it doesn't matter. That's why I believe in the alternative media, we've got to support him. Unlike, for example, from the same network, Shepard Smith and members of the Five, for example, who are on opposing camps. And you might ask, how could that be? Because that ultimately the objective, especially when I'm talking about the Fox network, the objective there is to rid that network of any conservative or Christian conservative, any semblance of Christian conservative viewpoint. and to subjugate itself fully to the agenda of the global governance collective. That's what the objective is. But you know what? They can't do it because of the ratings, for example, of Sean Hannity, because of the popularity. They cannot do it. Much like you can't just, you know, remove Donald Trump unceremoniously because of the uproar it would cause. So they've got to do it backhandedly. And that's what's taking place right now. I hope that makes sense, but that's what's going on. And you can see little fractures that they're becoming evident with the programming. And you can tell, as a matter of fact, in the audio segments I will play, I will point a couple of very important issues out that are not the subject or not the focus of the audio segments, but when you hear that those particular segments, pick up on a few things that are kind of glossed over, because again, that's not the topic, but it will substantiate exactly what I'm saying. And then, of course, you've got the others out there in the blogosphere or in the media or in the on the internet that are attempting to take down this program, other programs like this program. Every day, I want to say this, every day it is a fight to stay on the air. Every day it is a fight to maintain our visibility because of the way the entire infrastructure has been set up to silence the conservatives. And if you are a Christian conservative, you are even more of a target. Now, I had spoken recently of a Rolling Stone interview that I granted, and you know, I've had so many people tell me, and good for them because they're correct. Well, what else did you expect? And I can relate to what Sean Hannity had gone through with the New York Times piece that's coming out this Sunday. He spoke about this last night. And the reason I bring this up is because if you're listening to this and you are part of the alternative media or the new media or the media that's on the internet, you will, at some point, you will likely face the same type of opposition if you are not already facing this opposition. And I've spoken to numerous members, very high profile members of the alternative media, people, for example, that have, you know, hundreds of thousands of followers, for example, on Twitter and followers on other various other social networking platforms or YouTube. I've spoken to these individuals and they're seeing the same thing. The very people who are on our side are seeing the same thing, this takedown. So this third topic of the takedown, silencing, very important as well. And it's going to come simultaneous with, concurrent with, or subsequent to, for example, the silencing of the conservative voices in the corporate media, which is why we all have to stick together. But of course, there will be those out there who will what would you expect, for example, from the Rolling Stone? I get that. I understand that. Shame on me. Shame on me for falling into that trap that I should have known, of course. I should have known. So, but put that aside, because we're all adults here. Put that aside. And if you haven't read it, fine. If you want to read it, fine too. It doesn't matter. But I got lumped in and these are other, this description is by others, a crazy cat lady. That's not my words. Okay, those are not my words. All the way with Jack Posobiec. Okay, the topic was Pizzagate, debunking Pizzagate, and it's funny because I'm looking and I'm being sent information by listeners to this program and said, you know, it's what did you expect? Number one, but number two is, do you realize that so-called bloggers or journalists or people who are on the conservative side are latching onto that and using that piece to assail your credibility, to say that you are not a credible source? Okay, now again, Rolling Stone, yeah, I get it. New York Times, I get it. What do you expect? However, when you have people within, supposedly on the same side, using that, weaponizing that, and saying, see, I told you, he's not a credible source. In their own struggle for relevance, in their own struggle to raise or elevate their visibility, shame on them. Not shame on me in that case. But they will have to be answerable to a higher power at the end of the day. And as a matter of fact, history, I don't believe, will be kind to them because, you know, they've got their own issues. And in fact, one individual, an older female, they've got their own problems. Trust me when I tell you. As a matter of fact, one person I'm thinking of, even her husband, was the subject, apparently, as I understand it, the subject of a child services investigation a number of years ago into the alleged sexual improprieties with their own daughter. It's my understanding. So they've got their own problems. Look, I'm not saying there's any guilt or anything like that. I'm just saying that's what happened. So the only reason I bring this up is because one can take, without regard to the truthfulness of a charge, one could take the mere mention of a charge or of an allegation and weaponize it. And that's what's taking place behind the scenes all across the internet, all across the media, whether it's the corporate media or the alternative media. And it's sad. But let's get right into this, or let's continue into this, because, again, this is important. The takedown of Donald Trump, that Mueller agenda, trust me when I tell you that there is a lot here. And let me play the first of four audio segments. This is a minute long. You know Keith Olbermann. He's now finalizing. He's wrapping up, of course, his segments, the resistance. Why? Because there's nothing more he can do. It's pretty much a done deal. Donald Trump will be out. So there's no more need for him. And in his last, final broadcast, he outlines seven routes or pathways to the elimination, and I'm talking about the political elimination of Donald Trump as president. But the first one, to me, is most important, because this is what's taking place behind the scenes right now. And people are not seeing this, but I've got to tell you, there is something very wrong here. There's something extremely wrong when you have Mueller and Weissman and the people that comprise the special counsel and that investigative team, what they are doing to think of this. Think of a dirty cop, for example, or dirty cops bringing in people on charges, criminal charges, and putting them in an interrogation room and pressing them until violating these suspects until such time as they flip or say, okay, enough, I'll plead to anything. I shot Kennedy, for crying out loud. I'm guilty. Just leave me alone. This is what's taking place right now. And the focus is on General Flynn. Very, very dangerous. Very dangerous. Now you've got Michael Flynn, the general, and then his son. Recall the Twitter, the tweet messages that were sent back. My goodness, they were sent out last year, or it is prior to the election, about Obama, about the legitimacy or illegitimacy of Barack Hussein Obama to constitutionally hold the office of president. Big deal. And indeed a big deal. That's just one example. Payback, as they say, is a you-know-what. Well, this is payback. And they're leveraging Michael Flynn Jr. against Michael Flynn Sr. Or I should say, and think of this. You're a father. and you, and the investigators come up and tell you, I'll tell you what, your son, he'll never see the light of day. We're going to toss him into solitary. We're going to toss him into prison. And you know what? His life's over. It's done. It's over with. Oh, you know what? Unless, of course, you cooperate. Pretty powerful, in my view, a pretty powerful leverage. This is the tactic. These are the tactics being used. And yesterday I sent a tweet at my own personal Twitter account. The views there are my own. They don't represent necessarily Hagman Report. And my Twitter feed is at Hagman PI. And I quoted former federal prosecutor Sidney Powell. When she referenced the Robert Mueller, special counsel, mission, and how some people say it's mission creep. Well, she, and I'm paraphrasing now, she said this is not mission creeps. This is creeps on a mission. And basing her experience as a former federal prosecutor, just a fantastic federal prosecutor, but one with ethics and morality, who can see through the incredibly transparent objectives and tactics, I should say, of this Mueller team against Donald Trump and against the will of the people. Again, the bottom line here is I'm not talking about Donald Trump the man. I'm talking about the movement, the survival, something much bigger than Donald Trump. And one of the spokes people for the resistance being Keith Olbermann, such as he is, now saying, okay, it's pretty much over. It's a done deal. Watch what happens next. Listen to this audio segment from Keith Olbermann. Go ahead and play clip one. I'll comment on this afterwards. Go ahead and play Olbermann clip one.
I'm confident now, even more so than I have been throughout the last year, that this nightmare presidency of Donald John Trump will end prematurely and end soon. And I am thus also confident that this is the correct moment to end this series of commentaries. The important stuff first. There are seven routes in front of Trump. Each inevitably ends in his impeachment or resignation. The first, the likeliest, became 1,000 times more likely with the Thanksgiving news of a possible deal between Robert Mueller and General Michael Flynn. As I reported here as long ago as April 4th, the most specifically qualified expert alive on the subject of prosecuting a president, my friend, the Nixon White House counsel John Dean, put it to me very simply. Mueller is not shooting down. Mueller does not make a deal with Flynn to get Paul Manafort. He does not make a deal with Flynn to get Jared Kushner. He does not make a deal with Flynn to get Trump Jr. Mueller makes a deal with Flynn to get Donald Trump. Period. The Flynn deal report suggests Mueller has completely assembled the backbone of his case and is now just hanging the meat from it. And just as importantly, if Flynn has merely considered a deal from Mueller, it almost necessarily means Flynn either doesn't believe he would get a pardon from Trump, or that Mueller, as I've also reported here, has succeeded in finding a way around Trump's pardon power. And either of these near certainties spell Trump's doom.
Okay, that was Keith Olbermann this week, allegedly last broadcast now. The resistance is over because why? Because it's the writing's on the wall. The Donald Trump presidency is pretty much over. The, of course, method of takedown, one of seven most likely will be the taking down of General Michael Flynn, his son, and leveraging that information, the son versus the, or leveraging the son against the father, or the father against the son, whatever. But ultimately, the use of the information by Michael Flynn, Sr. and Jr. against Donald Trump, and the way they have done it is unconscionable. And there's six more. I'll spare you that. You don't have to listen to it. So have we finally seen the silence of this man that is one of the spokespeople of the resistance? Perhaps not. The issue here is the Flynn aspect to the Mueller investigation. This is key. This is critical. Please keep your eyes on this. There's a lot of things taking place behind the scenes. Now, others are reporting that this whole Mueller investigation is wearing on Donald Trump. And, of course, Donald Trump is supposedly seeing the last days. I mean, he's being reported as, my goodness, he's losing it because he knows his time is short and so on. And so, you know, look, so regardless of what you think of Oberman, it's not the man in that case. It's the message. It's the information that's provided here. And I do believe that there is there's truth in what Oberman says. The tactics are important here, and I think that we have to keep our eyes on this. And I think this is going to surprise many Americans. This is going to surprise many people when this comes out. And how this will come out is the Russian collusion, especially by Michael Flynn Sr. Donald Trump knew about this. And Flynn is the weakest link in the chain in this case. And I think that's going to be spelled the takedown, or at least the perception of the takedown of Donald Trump. Now, do I think that there's any wrongdoing? Of course not. It's projection by the Clintons, projection by the communists in power, by the deep state, by the shadow government against Donald Trump. That's what the issue is. But this is the method. This is the tactic. Please understand what is going on here with Flynn. Now, that's the number one, that the takedown. And again, this is against the will of the American people. This is to silence the conservatives. This is to silence the people who believe that in American exceptionalism, people who believe in the rule of law, people who believe in the Constitution. And part and parcel to that, in closely joined at the hip with that, is the Christian aspect of this as well. The United States as a Christian nation. Many will say that we're no longer a Christian nation after taking prayer out of public schools and so-called legalizing abortion and such. Okay, I understand that. We can rebuild that given the chance. We should rebuild that given the chance, obviously. But this is removing any chance of that taking place. So that's number one. Number two, the attempt to communize the United States, of course, is the role and objective, the agenda of the shadow government deep state. And there are members, of course, of the shadow government who are still in power. And regardless of what happens with Donald Trump, regardless of what happens, what's going on elsewhere, that is their objective, and that's to make this representative republic a communist collective. Now, I can see a lot of, at least in my view, I can see a lot of parallels between post-World War II, 1945, the McCarthy era, the infiltration by communists into our government, and selling out of America to communist interests. And you might think, well, how is that even possible? It's not only possible, it's happening. It did happen. I have spoken about Uranium One. I've written about Uranium One extensively. My latest, of course, is on HomelandSecurityUS.com, which is now dated about a week ago. It's still relevant. And, of course, on CanadaFreePress.com, I've spoken about Uranium One. I've played audio segments about Uranium One. And the key reporters about Uranium One, again, I go back to Sean Hannity, in the corporate media, because you're not going to hear this on CBS, NBC, MSNBC, or elsewhere. As a matter of fact, according to all of those broadcasts, those newscasters, those pundits, those journalists, Uranium One is, that whole scandal has been debunked. And even Shepard Smith from Fox News, oh, it's a non-story. It's been debunked. It's a lie. Okay. Over the past several days, I'm going to say 10 days or so, I've gotten a lot of email. Can you simplify Uranium One for us? Can you just give us the players? Many, many emails, to the point where I had asked members of my staff and others, do you understand the scope of the selling out of American assets, in particular Uranium One, to the Russians, and why, that, you know, what the backdrop is? Many, Now, of four individuals, staff-wise here, really only one had a good working understanding. So I asked, what would help in what would be the best thing for the majority of people? And I ask the folks, I ask you stay right through the end of this program because I'm going to tie everything together. But their response was, well, just kind of like a one-on-one primer would be great. So I was thinking about that, and I found, of course, Peter Schweitzer's book, Clinton Cash, and a section in that book, one chapter, was dedicated to Uranium One. And then I was looking at what I've written and such and seeing that there's somewhat of a it's a complicated subject. There's a lot of complex issues there. Okay, so what I thought, all right, here's what I'll do. Let me see if Peter Schweitzer has anything like a Uranium One 101 Cliff Notes version. And from Clinton Cash, the documentary, Steve Bannon, of course, the director's cut, there's a 6-minute summary of Uranium One. And I listened to it, I watched it, listened to it again, and I found that, and I was able to condense it a little bit more into a 6-minute clip, audio segment. So I would like, go ahead and play this as the Cliff Notes version of Uranium One. If you feel that you know the players, if you know the individuals, and if you feel sufficiently well-versed in Uranium One, you can, when you hear this on archive, you can skip ahead 6 minutes. Otherwise, I would really recommend for a kind of a primer or at least a refresher to listen to this again. This is Peter Schweitzer from the documentary Clinton Cash, 6 minutes in length, but this gives you a good idea of the foundational facts of Uranium One. Go ahead and play that clip. Folks, it's 6 minutes. This is Peter Schweitzer, Clinton Cash, giving the Cliff Notes version or the summary of Uranium One, including why this, of course, why it's important. And I think this will do people very well in this refresher or primer. Go ahead and play the clip.
The international uranium market is very competitive. The Kremlin sees dominance and control of the uranium market as a source of national power. Frank Giustra takes that uranium concession he got in Kazakhstan and puts it into a company in a so-called reverse merger, which was one way for a private company to go public to form something called Uranium One. It's a company traded on the stock market in Canada, and they start acquiring uranium concessions in places like Wyoming, Texas, New Mexico, and Utah. And by 2009, they have what is expected to be 50% of future uranium production in the United States. This gets the interest of Vladimir Putin and the Russian government. And in fact, there are State Department cables that were leaked through WikiLeaks, which show that Hillary was aware of the fact that the Russians took great care to try to dominate the international uranium market. Well, the Russians want to buy this asset, and they offer a 40% overprice on the share of the stock. And for this transaction to go through, it has to be approved by the U.S. federal government. Why? Because uranium is regarded as a critical industry in the United States. After all, this is used for our civilian nuclear reactors and goes into nuclear weapons. So it goes before the federal government, where it needs to be signed off by a series of federal agencies, including the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton. As Hillary Clinton is contemplating this, shareholders in Uranium One, including Frank Giustra, have sent more than $145 million to the Clinton Foundation. The chairman of that company at the precise time is a guy named Ian Telfer, who is also making donations to the Clinton Foundation, as is Frank Holmes, who is another major Uranium One shareholder. And Hillary Clinton, who has a record of opposing precisely these kinds of deals, comes out and says, you know what, I think this is a good deal. Let's let Vladimir Putin take control of what is now 20% of U.S. uranium production. Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton are the only figures in American politics who are willing to do this deal and who could actually pull it off because they had a reputation that runs so contrary to what they're doing. I mean, this is what the Clinton Foundation does, right? This is what they talk about politically, their support for human rights, their concerns about proliferation, their concerns about issues related to Russian aggression.
There's no doubt that when Putin came back in and said he was going to be president, That did change the relationship. We have to stand up to his bullying. And
what's so interesting when you consider this uranium deal are the actions of a small Canadian investment firm called Solida Capital. Solida Capital, in 2010, as this deal was going down, committed to give millions of dollars to the Clinton Foundation, and they also sponsored a speech by Bill Clinton in Canada. Solida Capital is also the name of a wholly owned subsidiary of Rosatom. Who is Rosatom? Well, this is the government agency in Russia that controls their nuclear arsenal, that built nuclear reactors in Iran, and engages in nuclear technology exchanges with rogue countries like North Korea. What this means, in essence, is that the Russian government, specifically Rosatom, was funneling money through a subsidiary directly to the Clinton Foundation. But the payday didn't end there. 4 months before Hillary Clinton's State Department would sign off on the Russian purchase of Uranium One, Bill Clinton got paid $500,000 to give a single speech in Moscow. He was being paid by a firm called Renaissance Capital, which has a long history of association with Russian intelligence services. What makes this speech stand out is not only the timing of when he's being paid, but the amount that he's being paid. You see, the last time Bill Clinton gave a speech in Russia was 5 years earlier. At that time, he was paid about a one-third of what he was being paid this time. Why is Russian control of 20% of U.S. uranium so troubling? If you're in an era where nuclear weapons are a reality, where nuclear energy is an important component of energy production in the United States and increasingly around the world, control of uranium is absolutely crucial. And unlike oil or natural gas can be found in so many places around the world, there are precious few places where you can find significant and large amounts of uranium that you can produce on a commercial scale. What we've essentially done is handed this precious resource to Vladimir Putin and the Russian government. They're not only engaged in aggression in places like Ukraine, but they've been very aggressive in fighting American interests around the globe. Russia's not an ally. Russia's not a friend. Vladimir Putin's Russia is a rival of the United States, and yet we've given them control over this precious resource.
Uranium, the key mineral in nuclear generation, is a domestic resource.
This is what's going to power America.
I think a lot of people in Middle America would be surprised to know that the Russian government is doing business in places like Colorado or Wyoming or Utah. These are small mining towns. These are operations that have existed for a while, that have been under the control of American companies or for a while Canadian companies. But it's now Russian companies that control this, and those companies are controlled by the Russian government. Having read through the archives of the KGB, the files that they have been released, I can tell you that they look at the United States as weak and ineffectual. This is a thuggish government that is engaged in massive human rights violations. There are opponents of this regime that have been killed or have disappeared. There's been persecution of human rights organizations. There's been persecution of homosexuals. And it's shocking and stunning to me that there has not been more attention focused to this fact, that we have given this critical resource to somebody who is engaged in so much nefarious behavior.
Okay, so that was Peter Schweitzer from Clinton Cash. I think that gives everyone a good basic foundational understanding of the importance and, of course, the end result here with respect to the selling out of America's most precious resource that has national security implications. Thank you for listening to that, and thank you, Peter Schweitzer, for that very good foundational piece of information. Now, let's fast forward to today, because again, the parallels that we're seeing today are extremely similar to, very much similar to, what we've seen in previous years. Now, I'm talking about, for example, the selling out of American secrets. If you go back to the late 1940s, early 1950s, remember the selling out. Remember the communist infiltration in our country. The Communist Party USA, the Soviet operatives in our country, embedded within our government. That, I will argue and I will assert that they are still there. Many of, not, of course, not the same people, but the placeholders, if you will, have not been rooted out. And we are seeing virtually the same thing happen as we saw back in the 1940s, late 40s, and early 50s. We are seeing the nuclear proliferation. Then it was secrets. Now it's the actual material. And where is it ending up? It's ending up in the hands of the very countries that want to see us destroyed. And think about that. You've got uranium, potential uranium, actual the resource itself from the United States ending up possibly in North Korea. Imagine, and I'm not saying that this is going to happen, but imagine the United States or one of the United States' key countries military operational bases getting struck with a nuclear bomb made with uranium from America that actually was compliments of the Clinton Foundation and Hillary and Bill Clinton. Think about that. And think about the absurdity that is. And to allow this to take place while the entire transaction took place under the nose of the very person investigating the collusion against Donald Trump or the collusion of Russia and Donald Trump, which is a fairy tale. So all of this happened under the nose of Robert Mueller, at least this latest incarnation. This happened with the tacit approval of Robert Mueller. So there we have it. And so the very person who heads the team to investigate Russian collusion approved, tacitly approved at the bare minimum of the transfer of the most important national security, the most important resource having national security implications to our enemies. And this is the guy that people are cheering on? Robert Mueller and his team? Are you serious? Two more audio segments to wrap this up. Two more. Do I have enough time? Okay. Listen to the latest. I'm going to play this. It's a little over 6 minutes. I beg your indulgence. Please listen to this. This is the update that Sean Hannity last night, because again, he's the only one that is talking to Sarah Carter and John Solomon. You can't go to any place else. This is the only guy really in the media that is talking to these investigative reporters that are exposing the very issues I'm talking about. So you might ask, why am I playing Sean Hannity so much? Well, because he's the only one out there. And I have to say, you probably feel a lot better listening to John Solomon and Sarah Carter and Sean Hannity than me. So go ahead and play this extended clip. It has Sarah Carter, John Solomon, and this is specifically about the newest revelations about the uranium transfer under Clinton as Secretary of State and Obama, because this is Obama's problem as well, Obama's criminality as well. Go ahead and play that clip from last night, Sean Hannity, Sarah Carter, John Solomon, Uranium One, update, new revelations. Go.
Clinton Foundation may have significantly underreported donations that it received from a firm with deep connections to Russia and its nuclear energy holdings. Now, this according to a brand new article from The Hill's John Solomon and Allison Spann. Now, this was released earlier tonight. The report details, quote, the Clinton Foundation's donor disclosure site vastly understated support that the Clinton Global Initiative received from APCO Worldwide, a global communications firm that lobbied on behalf behalf of Russia's state-owned nuclear company. Now, we reached out to APCO for a statement. They gave us the same one that they gave The Hill. The executive chairwoman of APCO said, quote, APCO Worldwide activities involving client work on behalf of 10X and the Clinton Global Initiative were totally separate and unconnected in any way. All activities on these two unconnected activities were appropriate, publicly documented from the outset, and consistent with regulations and the law. Any assertion otherwise is false, unfounded, and a lie. Here with more, The Hill's John Solomon, investigative journalist Sarah Carter is with us. John, let's start with, okay, underreported donations received from a firm with deep connections to Russia and the nuclear energy holdings. Did that happen or not?
It definitely happened. APCO acknowledges it gave $1 million in what is known as in-kind pro bono services to the Clinton Global Initiative. The Clinton Global Initiative and the Clinton Foundation only disclosed $50,000 of cash payments that were made by APCO. The other million plus has not been disclosed until we learned about it from our records. We also know that the FBI undercover informant, according to his lawyer, Victoria Tensing, is prepared to tell Congress that the Russians told him they picked APCO specifically because of the Clinton connections, and that they expected APCO's support for the Clinton Foundation
APCO
to go up. They picked APCO specifically, and that they expected APCO's support for the Clinton Foundation to go up after Russia hired them. We're going to wait and see if he actually says that to Congress, but that's what his lawyer's saying. I think it's a fairly significant development.
And this is before CFIUS and the board and the nine separate government agencies, including state and the attorney general, signed off on it, right?
Yeah. Now, remember, APCO was hired to do another part of lobbying. They weren't working on Uranium One. They were working on helping the Russian government win billions of new uranium contracts in the United States. Uranium One was a separate deal, part of the same strategy, but they were working very differently on something that turned out to be much more valuable, billions of dollars of new utility contracts in the United States that were authorized by Barack Obama.
All right, Sarah, let's go to the money side of this. And you know the FBI informant, and you've discussed some of these things with him. Two things that are important here. One is follow the money. Number two is the timing of the donations. Let's put those two together and couple it with John's new report. Where did all of this money, the $145 million that Peter Schweizer talk about, come from? And what was the timing based on the activities as it relates to Uranium One, CFIUS, and the Clinton Foundation?
Well, we certainly know, Sean, there's been a number of concerns here. I mean, from the $145 million, which came from members of the board that were connected to Uranium One. And if I want to go back just really quick, because the APCO story is very important, they signed that contract in April of 2010. So that was before the CFIUS process went through later that October. So this was very important, and the informant made that very clear to his attorney, and John's 100% right on that. It's something that he's expected to testify to. So let's go back now to the money. Look at the money trail. How did they move this money? Where was the money moved to? How did it get into the Clinton Foundation? This is the reason why a special counsel or a prosecutor, an investigator, needs to look into this. And right now we know that there's four different committees on the Hill looking into this. There is the Judiciary Committee, the Oversight Committee, the House Intelligence Committee, and the House Foreign Affairs Committee. So this is a very serious, expansive investigation. It's going to require somebody with the know-how and capability to find it.
Follow up then, because the FBI informant knew about Putin's plans to get a foothold in the uranium market. By the way, we need uranium. Allowing someone to control it is beyond stupid. But bribery, kickbacks, extortion, money laundering. Is there evidence of any money laundering? In other words, the people in Canada, the Frank Gustrers of the world and others, is there any evidence? Where did they get all these millions to donate to the Clinton Foundation? And is there any chance that money was laundered and funneled to the foundation?
I absolutely think that once an investigation gets started, they may find some of that evidence. Now, I don't want to sit here and say definitively that they will.
But it's an open question now.
But it is an open question now. And so now we're looking at a couple of issues here. We know that money was laundered through banks in Cyprus, particularly Alpha Bank. There was Latvia. There was the Seychelles. There's a lot of evidence out there. And one thing that's very important, Sean, here is that the informant is going to be able to show that he was actually providing evidence to the FBI and the Justice Department long before CFIUS voted on this, showing how much Russia wanted to penetrate the U.S. energy market. And John's absolutely right on one point. In fact, it was way beyond Uranium One. It was $6.5 billion or more of U.S. energy.
John, I see you shaking your head.
Yeah, listen, that, I think we focus so much on Uranium One because that's where this story started in 2015. But it's only one piece of a larger puzzle. And you take a look at what Barack Obama administration, Hillary Clinton's own State Department helped approve and get through. It's a much larger giveaway to the Russian uranium industry. And here's, I think, the most important thing about today. Every or large parts of the story that Hillary Clinton and her defenders have given the media have now been proven wrong. Let's go through some of them. There was no reason not to reject the Uranium One deal. There was. The FBI had evidence of criminality by the very buyer of Uranium One. All of the donations were disclosed. They weren't all disclosed. There was lots of concern inside the FBI about where the money was coming from and that we really not had a full airing about that. And my favorite one, it was repeated on Shep Smith's show just a couple weeks ago on Fox, that no uranium left the United States. Uranium One did export American uranium out of the United States after Russia bought it.
To Canada, Europe, and maybe even Asia?
That's right. And that's according to Uranium One. That's not us. That's Uranium One. The three key defense points that have been put out there by the Clinton defenders are now been proven false, not by anonymous stuff, by documents and by true reporting. And I think that that's one of the things that is most important about today's story. One of the key pillars is not true.
We all know more about this story than we're telling. And I can only say to our audience that has been following this with you, stay tuned, TikTok.
Explosive new revelations, as you heard. TikTok indeed. For those people who are sick and tired on Twitter hearing or reading TikTok by Sean Hannity, well, there you have it. This is why the exposure of this the exposure of the criminality of the Clintons and the previous regime of Barack Hussein Obama and the very people who are investigating Donald Trump, Robert Mueller, James Comey, and others, there in Lynch, who signed off, essentially, as well as nine other cabinet member positions signing off on this deal, are complicit in the selling out of the United States, our security, to foreign governments. One final clip. I'm going to squeeze it in here. It's about a minute long. Extremely important. John Solomon talking about the very issues, debunking the debunkers. Listen to this, and the importance the importance of this will be obvious. Go ahead and squeeze that clip in. Last clip, John Solomon.
And here's, I think, the most important thing about today. Every or large parts of the story that Hillary Clinton and her defenders have given the media have now been proven wrong. Let's go through some of them. There was no reason not to reject the Uranium One deal. There was. The FBI had evidence of criminality by the very buyer of Uranium One. All of the donations were disclosed. They weren't all disclosed. There was lots of concern inside the FBI about where the money was coming from and that we really not had a full airing about that. And my favorite one, it was repeated on Shep Smith's show just a couple weeks ago on Fox, that no uranium left the United States. Uranium One did export American uranium out of the United States after Russia bought it.
To Canada, Europe, and maybe even Asia?
That's right. And that's according to Uranium One. That's not us. That's Uranium One. The three key defense points that have been put out there by the Clinton defenders are now been proven false, not by anonymous stuff, by documents and by true reporting. And I think that that's one of the things that is most important about today's story. One of the key pillars is not true.
So wrapping it all up, thank you so much for your patience and for sticking with me. Wrapping it all up, here's the deal. You've got this race, this race to expose the criminality, to expose the selling out of America by the very people who are charged with investigating this non-issue of collusion between Donald Trump and the Russians. You've heard how there is a media war or a war by the media. In fact, John Solomon did a great job in specifying, for example, Shepard Smith being full of you-know-what right there saying, look, Shepard Smith, factually incorrect. These are the issues at hand. Our country is being sold out with the larger objective here of selling us out to the communist collective. That's what's taking place today. And this is what we're fighting against. We are fighting against, like I'm fighting against the clock right now, we are fighting against time. Who's going to win out? Will it be the communist collective, the deep state shadow government, or will it be the people seeking the truth? Will it be us? Connect the dots on those segments. Connect the dots on everything I just brought forward to you. Please follow along and please tell others about this program. Tune in. Stay listening. God bless you.
The Doug Hagmann Radio Show is brought to you by The Hagmann Report. Tune in to The Hagmann Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmannReport.com. That's HagmannReport.com.